Does God want a separation of church and state? Should Christians be voting biblical principles? Does it really matter who you vote for? Join Pastor Jerry Cook as he endeavors to answer these and many other questions over the next hour on Politics in the Pulpit. And now, Pastor Jerry Cook.
Afternoon and welcome to Politics and the Pulpit here on your hometown station, 98.1 FM and AM 1220. This is your holy host, Pastor Jerry Cook. And if you were looking forward to Valerie Bradford from the Santa Clarita branch of the NAACP, which is what I teased you with last Wednesday as we were going off the air, unfortunately, you're just going to have to wait because, unfortunately, Miss Bradford canceled her appearance on our show on Monday and did not offer any reasons why. So would you pray, if you're a Christian out there, that she might be able to come on and make her case for the NAACP out here in Santa Clarita? And if there's any leftists out there that wants to stand in for Valerie Bradford and feels that you can make your case in a very respectful yet vibrant manner, love to have you come on the program and talk and do your best to validate those positions and show why you believe what you believe and why you're proud of it. Very briefly, before we get into our guest today, you'll be very pleased by who we have on. Let me give you a couple of shameless plugs here, if I might, here on the top of the hour. If you are looking for a church, I'd encourage you to check us out at freedomswaybaptistchurch.org. That's right, we have finally moved from the .com to the .org. Don't ask me why, it's been 21 years, but Freedoms with an S, freedomswaybaptistchurch.org, the church where woke Christianity goes to die. If you're looking for a school where your young kids can be educated and not indoctrinated, I would encourage you also to check out Lighthouse Christian Academy. They are our ministry there at Freedoms Way Baptist Church. You can find them on our website. Just go up to the home bar there and just click on to Lighthouse Christian Academy. And we, again, do not indoctrinate. We educate your kids. And so talk to Christine Aragon, who is our school administrator. She would be great to talk to. And also, we're also making sure that we're planning for fall of 2023 in case you're looking for a school for your youngest ones. So as I said at the top of the hour here, Valerie Bradford is not going to be in studio with us today, but we have with us today Sonia Schmidt. Yes, Sonia Schmidt. For over 20 years, Sonia worked as a television comedy writer and producer on Fox, NBC, Disney, and Black Entertainment, and more. After retiring from Hollywood, she ventured into a world of politics and acting. She hosted her own political internet show for Pajamas Media entitled Left Exposed and played the role of Michelle Obama in Laura Ingraham's comedy stage production The Obama Diaries. And she's portrayed a variety of political characters in her two-woman comedy production entitled Ladies of the Right. Her children's book, Deb and Sebi's Real Deal on Global Warming, assuages children's fears by setting the record straight on climate change, can be found on Amazon. Originally from South Central Los Angeles, Ms. Schmidt is a single mother who went on to dance professionally, domestically, and internationally, and now seeks to move from California, which I'm going to try to convince her not to, or as she refers to it, the Titanic with good weather. Would you welcome Ms. Sonia Schmidt on to Politics in the Pulpit? Sonia, say hello.
Hello there. Sonia Schmidt's hard to say. Say that 10 times fast.
It is, yes. We've already joked about the SS part of it there, but that's a topic for another day. But Sonia, other than the bio that I read there, which of course was very eloquently written, almost as if you might have written it yourself, Sonia, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how you found yourself from South Central to Santa Clarita, and just your journey to where you are today.
Okay, and I've got to do this briefly. From South Central to Santa Clarita. All right, and into Hollywood.
Yeah.
I had two children, two daughters. Mm-hmm. And by then, by the time they were, 8, 11-ish, I was ready to work outside of the home. I was a full-blown alcoholic. Mm. I had not gone to church at all. Mm-hmm. And I decided to teach myself how to write television because entertainment was all I had ever done.
Sure.
Turned out I put them to bed, gave them their dinner, put them to bed, and I started studying out of a book, and I wrote my first script, and I got an agent, and I got into Hollywood.
Wow.
Still with an alcoholic problem and two daughters who I knew, I'm their only role model.
Yeah.
So I met a woman at Paramount Studios where I worked, who was an electrician, and she kept inviting me and my kids to church. Mm-hmm. And I said, sure, take the kids. It'll give me some time to stay home and drink.
Sure.
Frees me up.
That's
works
right.
for me.
Got a babysitter.
I got a babysitter. So she shows up to pick up the girls, and she forces me to go with her, and I get saved.
Amen. Praise the Lord.
Amen. And then my career takes off. I work for over 20 years in Hollywood.
Wow. And what we're going to venture, or as Jen Psaki used to say, we're going to double back, circle back on that in just a second here. But, you know, one of the things that's in the news here in the last 24-hour news cycle, of course, is the tragedy that occurred in Nashville, Tennessee. We kind of assume things like this happen more in bluish states and bluish cities. But, of course, it just goes to show you that sin can happen in any city or any state in our country, unfortunately. But obviously, we had six individuals tragically shot by this individual by the name of Audrey, who I guess is a biological female, but ended up identifying as a male. So this whole transgendered ideology kind of crept into this. We have a Covenant Presbyterian Christian school that's being targeted, at least from my perspective, I think it was targeted. But yet, it seems like the narrative doesn't fit the media. And so they had a real tough time trying to figure out how they're going to spin this to make the right look bad and somehow, in a weird, obtuse way, bring this back to Trump, because obviously we know that everything begins and ends right there with Trump. But what were your thoughts when you heard the story, considering you have, obviously, young grandkids that are attending school? What were your thoughts when you initially heard the story yesterday, or the day before yesterday, I should say.
I think that I am Rush Limbaugh's baby sister. I know the left like the back of my hand. So when I heard the story, and they said this was a woman, the first information that came out was a 28-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Women don't typically do crimes like this.
You're absolutely right.
Okay? It's like suicide. They don't typically hang themselves, mm-hmm. something far less violent. So I knew that there had to be some transgender issue here. And then later, of course, they said it was, you know, a transgender, that she identified as a male. I watched the video of her going through the building. She carried herself like a man. So I knew that the media was wrapping themselves around this. They couldn't get their heads around how they were. Oh, luckily for them, though, she wore a red hat, a red cap.
Yeah,
so,
well, that's good.
So that was their closest to getting to Trump. But they don't really know what to do with this other than to turn it, which is what I knew immediately, that they're going to turn it around to Christians. It's the Christians' fault from being, because they're so hateful and anti-LGBTQ.
Of course.
Plus. So that is exactly what they're doing. The scary thing about this, I've just been immersing myself into videos about these trans kids. Mm-hmm. I've always known that there's other problems here. Changing their sexuality is not their problem.
Mm-hmm.
They've been fed this, that this is their problem and this is their fix.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's looking at their psychological problems. They're not looking at home problems. They're not looking at anything else.
Yeah.
So now we have this onslaught of kids who are coming on the air telling the truth about wanting to be de-transgendered and how this was the worst thing that ever happened to them.
Sure.
And nobody's listening to them.
Yeah.
You know, they said the media is now is saying that this girl, this shooter, just needed to be seen. She needed to be heard. In this society, they are heard.
Yeah.
They aren't being targeted. They, you know?
Yeah.
The people who aren't being heard are the people who are saying, yeah, I did this and it was a mistake. And, you know, I really would like to be seen and heard. And yet they're getting beaten up and yelled at. And
yeah,
it's a terrible thing that's going on. I mean, I was in tears watching the video of this, even the takedown is just listening to the sound of that alarm over and over and over. And these children in the school are going to hear that in their heads till for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, no doubt.
They're traumatized for life.
You know, what's interesting, Sonia, on the day that this occurred, I went to Facebook because that's what all of us, you know, guys do. Mm-hmm. You know, we're keyboard warriors. And I wrote this. I said, a 28-year-old biological female named Audrey Hale, who identified as transgender, targeted, shot, and killed 3 children, 3 adults at the Covenant Presbyterian Christian School in Nashville, Tennessee. And then I said, let's be clear about a few things. Number one, Audrey Hale killed these victims. Number two, Covenant Presbyterian is a Christian private school. And three, this shooting comes amid a surge in far-left death threats because Governor Bill Lee signed a bill banning transitioning medical services there in Tennessee. Those are the facts of the case. So naturally, the media, Sonia, will focus on, number one, the gun killed 6 people.
Right.
Number two, Christians are by definition intolerant and may even deserve to be targeted.
Right.
And Governor Bill Lee's bill that bans transitioning medical services was dangerous and pushed the gunman to act accordingly.
Isn't that amazing?
And again, that was the day that it occurred. And what's interesting, if you go on, you know, Breitbart, even left-wing sites, you will see the media spinning this to blame the governor and this transitioning bill that he wasn't going to allow to go through.
Sure.
And even in some sense, this was the fault of the Daily Wire and Matt Walsh and What Is a Woman and Michael Knowles.
That's
and all
right.
These guys.
And Shapiro.
And so it is amazing to me, if this were a white individual, mm-hmm. which of course usually these types of crimes, as you know, usually a white guy, and they will be quick to judge that, prejudge it,
mm-hmm.
before any of the facts come out. But here, man, this messed them up, didn't
they
it, Sonia?
They had no idea what to do with this. It's, I mean, I don't know what to say. You're the pastor here.
That's what they keep telling me.
You tell me. Are we not at the point where what's good is bad, what's right is wrong?
Sounds a little bit like Isaiah chapter 5 right there. Yeah, there definitely is a point where my pastor used to say this. He says, if God doesn't return anytime soon, he's going to have to apologize for Sodom
exactly.
and Gomorrah, right? I mean, you've heard preachers
exactly.
say that.
Exactly.
And obviously, it's got to get really bad before it gets really bad. It's the same thing that I say here in California. You know, you say in your bio that, you know, you're looking to get out of the state. I'm the kind of a guy that you described it as the Titanic sinking. I would say that I'm the guy that's proudly still polishing the brass because I still want this state to shine, and I want to kind of wrestle it back from the leftists that have turned it into what it is, because it's still a beautiful state.
It's a beautiful state. It's got everything you can ever imagine.
Yeah.
But it shows you how the left can really monkey up something,
uh-huh.
you know, something
no, exactly.
wonderful.
Exactly.
Because it is, you know, my family is here. My children are here. My grandchildren are here. I don't want to leave, but I've got one foot out the door and the other in a banana
peel. So if
peel.
You do leave,
mm-hmm.
which of the 49 states are you looking at?
It was very hard. I searched around for years and I just kept having to cross things off the list because wherever the left goes, they ruin it. It's like it's like roaches, you know,
yeah.
they just go into an area and they ruin it. Basically from the things that they have already done somewhere else.
Sure.
So last year I bought a home in South Dakota. So I'm renting it.
In Lily White, South Dakota?
Can you imagine? This is the new TV show. This old black woman moves to 20 degrees below in South Dakota, a California girl.
It's cold there,
it's
man.
Cold.
I don't want to go there.
I have no idea how I'm going to do this. I don't know anybody there other than people in the real estate business. But you know what? I'm out the door there. Home, mortgage, tax, and license for $1,100 a month. Right now, I've got a one-bedroom apartment. I'm paying $27.
Yeah, let's not promote all that because I don't want
okay,
to
you don't
be
want people
more
to
of an exodus of people
right,
coming out of our
right,
state.
Right.
Sonia, tell us a little bit about your foray into Hollyweird and how you kind of came to the realization, hey, I think I'm a conservative politically, and how that might have impacted your career there in Hollyweird.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, first of all, I didn't know what I was when I went there. I'd always voted Democrat because my family did, and I'm
sure.
black, so there you go. I'm supposed to do that.
You're supposed to check all the boxes.
Exactly.
There.
So like I said, I taught myself how to write. I got a job in Hollywood, and there was I got my first job, I think it was one of my first jobs, on a show called In Living Color. And
I want to start singing the song right now, and then
it still holds up.
I think I'm going to have to do.
You're going to be a fly girl, because I don't want to say this.
Paula Abdul did that. I think she did. But anyway, all right. In Living Color.
Oh, very good. So okay, so the executive producer, after I'm hired, he welcomes me by phone, and he says, "Well, when you come in, you're not going to think that I'm a part of Hollywood. I'm going to look really weird to you." And so I walk in the room, and I'm looking around, and I see this guy, kind of this pudgy white guy with a Santa Anita hat, a T-shirt, shorts, and tennis shoes. I'm still looking around the room looking for somebody who looks weird to me because he looks normal to me because I come from America.
Yeah.
So his name is Greg the Hillbilly Fields.
Oh, that's great. Great.
He wrote Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield and a few others that you would know.
I get no respect.
He gets no respect. We turn out to be great friends. Now, it turns out this guy's a Republican. So what I see in the other people in the room when I hear these conversations and I see what's going on, I see how ungrateful these people are, how they act. I go, I don't know what I am, but I'm not them, and I'm closer to this guy.
Yeah.
And on hiatus, when we'd get off work, he would say, I'm taking the family to America.
Uh-huh.
And I knew exactly what he meant. Uh-huh. The other ones were, they didn't have a clue what that meant, but I totally got it. And then I registered Republican, and typically I would take off and I worked out here when I moved to Valencia, and thank goodness I did. I had no idea what the political makeup was at the time, but, I moved out here and I worked on the Bush, campaign, and I had a pin on, a Bush pin, and I went to work. I forgot to take it off.
Uh-oh.
It's like, if you work in Hollywood, you don't put bumper stickers on, you know, I forgot to take this pin off. I walk in the writer's room with this Bush pin on, and all hell breaks through.
Oh, man.
It has never been the same for me since. They pounced on me that day and never let go. And that's when I learned how to take up for myself, and I started reading Ann Coulter and Thomas Sowell to figure out, well, why do I believe what I believe?
Sure.
And that's how I became a Republican. But they were so vitriolic about it. They were so hateful. One day, you know, they told us that we couldn't say Merry Christmas. So, of course, I had Christmas music blasting from my office, and I had Christmas cards dangling from everywhere. But they told us we couldn't say this. And then one day I walked in the writer's room, and they all had whoopee cushions and making fart noises. And
I love those
whoopee cushions. I do too. But these had the picture of Jesus on them.
Oh, great.
Yes. They went out of their way.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's okay. You know, funny is funny, but that ain't funny. But it just showed me who they are.
Yeah.
And how I got kicked out. We had a writer strike. I kind of knew I wasn't going to get, we call it invited back. We don't say you're kicked out. You don't get invited back.
Yeah.
And by then I had written the book. I was working on Deb and Sebi's Real Deal on global warming. So I knew once they found out about that, I wasn't going to be invited back. And sure enough, it's everyone worked the next season after the strike but me. And it's been that way ever since.
Wow, that is amazing. Well, when we come back here on Politics in the Pulpit, we're going to continue our conversation here with Sonia Schmidt. We're going to talk a little bit about, I'm so tempted to want to talk about In Living Color, because those were two shows I wasn't supposed to watch back in the late 80s.
I didn't let my kids watch it.
My non-Christian parents said, you cannot watch Married with Children and you cannot watch In Living Color. Both of those were politically incorrect then, and they're not even considered. I mean, I can't imagine how people would respond to them today, other than, of course, the syndicated shows. But we're going to talk a little bit more about why in the world does the black community just in lockstep vote black? And also about a rather disconcerting poll that I just saw from the Wall Street Journal about where patriotism, religious beliefs, and the importance of having a family has dwindled since 1998. When we come back here on Politics in the Pulpit, this is your holy host, Pastor Jerry Cook. We'll catch you in a minute. All right, we're back here live on Politics and the Pulpit with your holy host, Pastor Jerry Cook. We've been talking to Miss Sonia Schmidt here. And Sonia has a interesting background in Hollyweird, and she spent some time with the Foxes, in Living Color, and the Wayans. And I want to really investigate more of that. Obviously, there are not very many conservatives that are in front of the screen. I kind of mentioned to you before the show began that I live in an area where a lot of folks live around me that work behind the screen. They're, you know, Foley artists and, you know, boom guys and lighting guys. And a lot of them have told me that if you're a director or something like that, there's a possibility you're a liberal. But if you're just a normal guy, you tend to be more conservative. But if you're in front of the camera, the odds are pretty high you're just a flaming liberal. But yet, yourself, we mentioned James Wood earlier. We mentioned, what's his name?
John Voight,
Tom Selleck, and a few others out there that have kind of made a name for themselves down through the years and have survived Hollywood. What made you say, I'm done with this?
Well, I guess the ostracization. They just treated me so mean when I was honest about my feelings. I didn't, you know, the writer's room prides itself on having a diversity of thought.
Yeah.
Because you can say and do anything in the writer's room, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
There have been lawsuits that have come out of the writer's room just because even the women who type up the scripts can't handle it. You know, it's like being in a locker room in the worst way. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
And I absolutely loved it.
Okay.
So once I said that I said one day, they were talking about George Bush, and I said, gee, here's my sentence. I said, gee, not everybody feels the way that you do.
Yeah.
And heads whipped around. They turned to me. And from that day on, they tore up my scripts. They wouldn't take any of my jokes. They would laugh at my jokes and still wouldn't put them in the script.
Wow.
So I would go home crying every day. I mean, it was just awful. I wouldn't let them see me sweat. But it was horrible. It was really horrible. It was like a cat playing with a mouse that refused to kill it. You know,
wow.
it was really, really sad.
There's an interesting visual.
But I want to go back to what you were saying about the crew guys. One of my very first jobs was I went from page to being what's called a studio page. And that's just someone who sits on a studio, answers the phone, but I'm still a page, one of the people in the polyester uniforms. And it was on the Arsenio Hall shows when he first came to Paramount Studios.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to know all the crew guys. All the crew guys lived out here.
Yeah. here in Santa Clarita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this area, in this area. And I had never heard of it. It sounded like the moon to me.
Yeah.
So, I found myself here one day looking for houses, and I got lost. And I ended up staying here. I've been here for, in this area for about 20 years.
Yeah, I've been here for at least 18 years, 17 years, mm-hmm. and in and around this area. And it's definitely different from South Central Los Angeles.
A little bit.
Yeah, and what's interesting is when you were in South Central years ago, I mean, it was probably much different than it is even today. It was probably bad, but it's not like it is today.
It wasn't bad. Here's
yeah.
the thing. Two-parent households.
Yeah.
Didn't know anybody who came from a single-parent household. There was one family that the husband and wife got a divorce, and that was a huge thing. Grades were incredibly important. I don't know if it was Chris Rock recently talking about if you messed up, everybody had the right to beat you. Everybody's parents had the right to beat you. And that's how it was. You wouldn't dare do anything disrespectful, especially to your teachers or principals. God forbid. If your black mother had to be called from her job to
yeah.
come and deal with you a disciplinary problem, you're dead meat. So
yeah.
it would never happen. The lawns were manicured. The home, I had a friend when I was in Hollywood, and he wanted to go look at to buy something. Happened to be in Compton, and he was afraid. I was like, "Don't be afraid.
Hmm.
It's really not bad." And I
yeah.
told him I'd go with him if he wanted me to. And he went and he came back. He was surprised. No, nice homes, families, the whole bit. And it's the rap culture, the gang culture. I saw when the left came in and told these young men, now I come from a neighborhood where we had Japanese gardeners, okay?
Uh-huh.
That's how nice the neighborhood
yeah.
was. And overnight.
They know how to do a bonsai.
Okay.
Man.
All right. So but overnight, these kids learned that they were supposed to be angry. They changed their names, and all of a sudden, those who weren't in jail were were wounded from gang violence in wheelchairs. I mean, you talk about that movie we were talking over the break about the Keenan's parody of parodies, and they do Don't Drink Juice. I forget the title name of it.
I just remember White Chicks. So.
Yeah. Okay.
One of my favorites.
They do a great job in showing the funny side of the hood, but it's exactly what it turned into after the left infiltrated it.
Hmm.
You know?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You don't know this, but my dad, who's passed on already, he came from Tennessee. He's definitely the official redneck here. Mm-hmm. And he was from the Nashville area, actually more like Knoxville, I should say. He bummed a ride out here in 1959, became a truck driver, essentially. You know where he settled and my side of the family on my dad's side settled? Watts and Compton.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, in 1959, 1960, it was a whole different ballgame. If you mention Watts and Compton today, most people are be petrified just to even talk about it, let alone visit. Mm-hmm. But yet, you know, 50-plus years ago, it was a great place to live, single-family homes, and everybody, you know, whether you were black or white, you had mom and dad living in the household.
Right.
You're going to have to sit in for the NAACP this afternoon, Sonia.
Okay.
Obviously, as I mentioned at the top of the program, Valley Bradford, the branch president here for the NAACP refused to come on without giving any excuse for why she didn't want to come on. But I'm going to ask you, as a black woman, why, even with all of the overtures, and I think there were genuine overtures by the Trump administration, why do you think that blacks vote in a block for Democrats, even though they know maybe down deep in their heart of hearts, maybe, that they're really kind of voting against their own best interest here? Because obviously there's been no success.
Right. There's a lot in that question you just asked. Okay, let's start with Trump. I think that he gained a lot of numbers with black voters.
He did.
So I don't think it's a matter of them not jumping ship. Like I said, I didn't say this, but I always wondered why black people didn't love Rush Limbaugh.
Uh-huh.
He's hilarious. He's strong. He's masculine. I mean, he has all the same traits as a Trump.
And don't forget Bo Snerdly.
There's Bo Snerdly, who I thought was a fake character for many, many years. I didn't know he was a real guy.
He's legit.
But I think it's because the lack of exposure.
Yeah.
So that would answer your next question. Why don't we vote in our interests?
Yeah.
Two reasons. One is lack of exposure to facts. Facts, we have become, the society has become allergic to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you're black, white, young.
Yeah.
We cannot stand facts. And we get angry. I mean, you watch kids. If you've been to any of the meetings here with the parent meetings for a school board, if you throw facts
at them. Well, I don't have my Kevlar vest, unfortunately.
You'll need one. Once you throw facts out there, it angers. It's like throwing holy water on demons. They really react to that.
Sure.
I think it may be because they're not able to articulate their points, which is maybe why I can't answer why your guest didn't show up. And I wish that she had, because I really want to hear their points of view. I really want to exchange thoughts and ideas. But they will not do that. Why do they vote Democrat? Because they hate Republicans. The left has done a wonderful PR job.
Yeah.
At demonizing Republicans.
The thing that I find odd, and just as a pastor, if I might, Sonia, a huge swath of the African American community tends to be religious.
Yeah.
Has either a Baptist or some sort of Pentecostal background. And, I mean, you're not going to find very many black Roman Catholic churches.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to find many of them in the Jehovah's Witnesses or the Mormons. You're going to find them in in Baptist churches or Pentecostal, Assemblies of God, kind of things like that. And those churches tend to be more traditional in their understanding of the faith. And every African-American that I've known that unfortunately voted Democrat believed in a mom and a dad in a household, even though they may not have grown up that way, and they don't believe in all of this woke nonsense that is coming from the party that they keep putting back in. So I'm like, why are they just doing this in lockstep?
I don't think that they know that that comes from the left. You know, I think that these ideas that you're talking about, the wokeness, and we can talk about everything from the transgendering to, you know, we've seen a huge change in the black community. What is it, 75% of kids who are born into single-family households?
Exactly.
So something happened in the church. And, you know, like churches in general are becoming woke. I think a long time ago, black churches were becoming more permissive. When you have a society that's saying, if you don't believe in these things, then you're a hater. You have our children who are experimenting with these things. I saw the black church start to crumble a long time ago. We would party on Saturday, show up with a hangover on Sunday, and still call ourselves Christians.
Sinner on Saturday, saint on Sunday.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, it's not exclusive to black people, but I think the...
I think I got a few of those in my congregation. But anyway...
I mean, what is being a Christian anymore? If you just call yourself that, then... You know, my grandson asked me that the other day, and I thought, that's a great question. Very few people ask that question.
Well, obviously, I don't want to be a cultural Christian, because that's kind of like what most people assume when they say, well, you're from America, you must be Christian. I'm not a cultural Christian. I'm a I'm a convictional Christian. I have a conviction about what I believe, and more importantly, I believe the Holy Spirit of God did a work in my heart. I believe that Jesus Christ is my Savior, and I believe, and this is what I find odd, because of my biblical values, I have to find a party that most closely aligns, and it's not always a Republicanism, by the way, I have to find a political party that most closely aligns with those biblical values. And if my political party doesn't align with my biblical values, what does that say about my relationship to Christ, the church that I attend, and whether or not my testimony is even valid?
But what they've said is that our Christian values are anti-love, gay, that we're haters, that we're hateful, that we're violent, that we're nationalists. So even though the Republican Party may line up more closely to our values, what they're saying is the Republican Party is a bunch of racist nationalists and sellouts like myself. So I could see why they're not going to... Listen, my only hope was I knew that I couldn't convince black people who I had an audience with to vote Republican. But I was like, you know, just like the doctor's oath, do no harm. Do no more harm. Don't vote at all. I'd rather you not vote at all. Think on this a couple of years before you go back out and cast that ballot. But there's a lot of psychological reasons, too. Listen, I've been called every name in the book. Some of them are really funny. But, well, I'm a comedy writer, so of course it's not going to tear me apart. But who wants to go through that? We want to belong to a tribe. It's human nature. We don't want to be kicked out and put on the ice floe and sent out to, you know, the Netherlands.
Did you just speak ill of the Dutch?
I'm so racist. Such a racist me. But, so nobody wants to go through that ostracization. Well, I've said that twice today, and I don't know that I've ever said that. It's a hard word. But nobody
it's like
wants
saying
to
Sonja Schmidt.
Sonja Schmidt, 10 times fast. Nobody wants to feel that. So black people, nobody wants to be kicked out of, you know, they say, my kids used to tease me about, you know, I like country music. I like classical music. I was a dancer, for crying out loud. But they would say, I'm not black enough. Not black, you know.
Whatever that's supposed to be.
Whatever that's supposed to
be. Let me ask you this, Sonja. Considering that you were in the industry for a bit, I wanted to ask this question of the NAACP rep that was going to be here today. And it's this. Why is it acceptable within the community of the music community to use terms like the N-word and demeaning language against women that rappers will use and hip-hop artists will use? And they've done this for years. This is not just a present thing. This is like going back 30 years or more. Why is that acceptable to do that, but yet it's not acceptable in any other capacity.
Okay. And let's call her up and ask her that question. I have my own feelings about it.
You've got 2 minutes to do this.
Okay. All right. The argument that I've heard from people on their side at these meetings is that it's a word that we use now to take back power over the word.
I gotcha.
Well, I'm saying if we took back the power mm-hmm. of this word, then why are we standing here at school board meetings whining and crying because somebody else said it? You're still giving it a lot of power.
Yeah.
Another thing is, people treat you like you treat yourself. And I teach my grandchildren, you don't get to say that word. If you're going to be upset that somebody else says this, then you can't use it. You have to treat yourself like you want other people to treat you.
Sure. That sounds like a golden rule thing.
It sounds kind of like a golden rule to me. So they don't want anybody else to say it but themselves. But I don't think that they take the time to kind of examine why they say it and why it's not equally as ugly. When you're calling yourself names, I don't know why that's acceptable. It says I hate me.
Yeah.
And that's not acceptable.
What's interesting, in the late 1960s, James Brown, of course, which was a sane voice for the black community for decades, mm-hmm. you know, back in 1968, I think his hit was Say It Loud, mm-hmm. I'm Black and I'm Proud.
Yeah.
And a lot of white folks didn't really like that. But in reality, if you listen to the lyrics, if you can uh-huh. listen to the lyrics as James sings them or yells them, it's actually quite a good song in many ways. It's actually an empowering song. And it's not just isolating one group against another.
No.
James was actually probably far more conservative than...
James was the Republican, I've
heard.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I think he supported Nixon in 70, in 68 and all that, so it was an interesting thing. But we can talk about James Brown another day. When we come back here on Politics in the Pulpit, we'll kind of wrap up the show with Sonia Schmidt and talk a little bit about this Wall Street Journal article that has some pretty unfortunate news here. And also, I'm going to ask Sonia if she thinks MLK's dream is still alive. We'll be back in a minute. All right, we're back here live on Politics in the Pulpit on your hometown station, 98.1 FM and AM 1220. We're going to wrap up our conversation today with Ms. Sonia Schmidt. We're so thankful to have you today in lieu of Valerie Bradford. But I think we're going to have Sonia back. I think Sonia offers some good perspective here, not only from an African-American side of things, but also someone who has worked in the industry in Hollywood and has kind of seen some of the intolerance that happens with the same people who want to wear... who put bumper stickers on the back of their car that say coexist. So it's kind of ironic that they do that. Do you find it ironic, just on a side note here, that the irony of ironies that the three most negative people on television are named Joy, Sonny, and Whoopi?
Very good observation. But everything about the left is contradictory.
I guess.
So there you go.
Do you think that Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream is still alive? I'm going to quote here a fuller context quote from what most of us understand from his I Have a Dream speech. He said, quote, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." I would love for that dream to be a reality. I think any God-fearing, America-loving individual would want to see that. I just don't think the NAACP and some of its affiliates really want that to happen, because if it did, they'd be out of a business.
Yeah.
And they'd be no paycheck.
It's so sad. I remember when the NAACP was a cause for good.
Yeah.
And I think that's when I get frustrated, when I hear what they have to say and how they have to say it.
Yeah.
I don't mind hearing what people have to say, but they're not winning us over by yelling at us and calling us names and following us out to our cars and, you know. Yeah, no, that dream is a pipe dream now, it feels like. That dream of Martin Luther King. I'll tell you a quick story about my grandson. He had gone to a school out here in this community and was called the N-word. And everyone made a huge deal of it. And he was looking around. He didn't know what it meant because he never heard of it before.
Yeah.
And once we explained to him what the intent was behind that, we also got to have a teachable moment as to how this word should not mess up your day.
Yeah.
You know, it's a word. It's no big deal. And I got to teach him another word, which was jerk. The kid's a jerk. You don't know what's going on in
his
heart.
That's just a reference to an old Steve Martin movie.
That's right. He thought that was the funniest thing, but he never let that word bother him. And yeah. I think that's the most important thing, is to not, you know, we're giving people so much power by saying you can never say this word. When, again, like you mentioned, we have rappers doing it.
Let me say this real quick. Mm-hmm. The fact that your grandson is not affected by that mm-hmm. word, actually, he has the power.
He has the power. Gave it back
to
him.
And therefore, neither side can control him.
That's right. And guess what happened to the guy who called him that? They became best friends.
Great.
They are buddies today. Yeah. And, listen, after these kids have been in lockdown for 2 years with parents maybe that they shouldn't be or situations that they shouldn't be in, they've lost the ability to socialize. So many things have happened to these children. They've been masked up. They've been forced vaccine. I mean, I have a list here of the things that these children are going through. And to throw racism in the bucket for them, that they have to be most target, you know, they have to be most upset about, is a disservice. I think the NAACP is doing to the black children out here in this community.
I agree totally. I want to end with this. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to get to this Wall Street Journal article because I don't think right now I feel led to talk about it. Maybe I'll bring it up next week. But here's my thinking, and maybe you can kind of correct me or steer me in the direction as we kind of close out the show today. We had a generation in the 1920s and 30s that went through the Great Depression. They were able to get through it. And then we had the World War II generation, which, you know, even Tom Brokaw wrote a book called The Greatest Generation. Obviously a fabulous generation to go through depression, go into a war. And then, of course, we had unparalleled growth in the 1950s under Eisenhower. Then we had a generation that was able to fight through Vietnam, Korea first, Vietnam. And then to some lesser degree, but not to diminish the Gulf War in the 1990s. So it seems like just about every generation in the 20th century had some sort of thing that they had to come against. Really, in the last 30 years, we've had relative ease here in the United States of America. And it seems like something has to be manufactured, some sort of distress, like climate change, racism, be what it may, has to be manufactured out of whole cloth and forced upon a very young generation of people, the younger the better, to make them think that their present distress is unbearable.
Right.
What say you to that?
Absolutely. And they're easy targets because they have no purpose. They've had God stripped from their lives.
Yeah.
So these, and I promise I wouldn't say this anymore on the air, but
just say it.
Often I call the left godless, soulless ghouls.
Yeah.
And they put that on children. Anybody who can put that on children, they're godless, soulless ghouls.
Yeah.
And these kids are just primed for the taking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they're very vulnerable. And, I'll just say one thing about this poll here that I saw from the Wall Street Journal. The share of Americans who say that having children, involvement in their community, and hard work are very important values has fallen. It was 80% of Americans who believed that in 1998. It's like 32% now that believe that. And when you're constantly told by the left in reality, hey, you shouldn't have kids because they're not going to be here in 8 years. That's what Ocasio-Cortez has said. But anyway, last word to you, Sonia. What can you say to our folks out there just by way of encouragement as we close out the show today?
Listen.
You know Joe Messina, so you have some things of encouragement.
He lifts me up because I go on his show every Friday that I do at 6 o'clock, and I need lifting up because after a whole week of hearing the news, I think we're all doomed. I heard this chart that you're talking about, that you're referencing. I heard that last night and I went to bed and went, we're doomed.
Yeah.
But the only thing that's going to bring us out is the faith of Jesus Christ. I mean, that's really the only thing that's going to lift this country up.
Absolutely.
I don't think he's forsaken America.
No, I don't either. And I don't want you to forsake California if I can get in the last word right there.
Okay.
Sonia Schmidt, thank you very much for joining Politics in the Pulpit today. We want to have you back on, Lord willing. Maybe your representative, Joe Messina, will allow me to do that. But again, thank you for tuning in today. We'd encourage you to tune back in next week at 2 o'clock. here on your hometown station, 98.1 FM and AM 1220. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Politics in the Pulpit with Pastor Jerry Cook. Join us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. right here on your hometown station, KHTS. You can also join Pastor Jerry every Sunday at Freedom's Way Baptist Church in Castaic. For more information, find us on the web at www.freedomswaybaptistchurch.com. That's www.freedomswaybaptistchurch.com or call us 661-714-5650. That's 661-714-5650. Thanks for listening. God bless and have a blessed day.